Today's program has been brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. Made with a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. For more information, visit www.rt11.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Listening to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. And picture this, or maybe Instagram this in your brain, if that works better for you. An 8 or 9 year old little girl in the suburbs of Long Island, short for her age, definitely short, sporting brown plastic aviator glasses on her nearsighted, chubby little face. Cute, very cute, but moderately overweight by 1970s standards. Wearing homemade flared bottom jeans that sit way up high over her little rounded belly, only they're not real jeans. They're made from stretchy knit polyester, not cotton, and the fabric is printed with a pattern of fake patched and embroidered denim with pretend holes and everything in little peace signs and rainbows. And they're too short because the petroleum-derived fabric was put in a hot dryer and they shrunk. And she's wearing those little pants and she's riding up and down her suburban block on her little blue Schwinn two-wheeler bike, not really exerting herself enough to burn off the belly, just pedaling around by herself. And on her plump little upper body, she's wearing a t-shirt, a little white and yellow and red t-shirt that came in the mail after the collection and sending of multiple package box tops and 50 cents for shipping and handling and 6 to 8 weeks processing time. And she is loving that t-shirt, mostly because it's new and hers only, not some hand-me-down from a neighbor or a cousin or made by her mother in an attempt to economize, which would backfire years later into costing thousands of dollars in therapy. No, this is her own t-shirt, and she loves it so much that she wears it as often as she can get away with, and her sister would never wear a t-shirt like that, as she is a tiny little budding ballerina with her long wavy hair perpetually up in a bun on her head and her little denim cutoffs paired with cute tops from the cream of the hand-me-down crop, since everything cute fits her, being a tiny ballerina type. Plus, she's a classy, cultured sophisticate, so she wouldn't be caught dead in something as pop cultural as that shirt. So the little chubster rides her bike up and down the block, making up stories in her head and carrying on her internal conversation with her imaginary friend, Laura Ingalls, who has come to the 1970s from the 1870s to visit and see the future. And she's explaining something about the t-shirt to Laura Ingalls right now. So let's hop into the foodiness time machine and drop in on them and listen. Well, Laura, girls today don't have to wear long calico dresses and bonnets like you do. We can wear fake printed denim complete with fake patches and sneakers from a discount store and t-shirts. What's a t-shirt? It's what I'm wearing. What do those three words on the front of it mean? Well, Laura, this t-shirt is printed with the three most important defining words of late 70s America. No, not impeach Richard Nixon. No, not sex, drugs, and rock and roll. That's four. No, Laura, this shirt says, Lego my ego. What's an ego? Oh, Laura, you guys from 100 years ago are really primitive. An ego is a waffle from the freezer. It's like your root cellar, but a lot colder. And no, my ma doesn't make waffles in a cast iron waffle maker over the cook stove like yours. This is the future. We pull them out of the freezer and we cook them in the toaster. And then we pour flavored colored corn syrup all over them and eat them before school. And if someone tries to grab your frozen waffle out of your chubby little paw, you shout, Lego my ego. And the ego people will send you this very t-shirt for only 10 box tops and 50 cents. And it's mine, all mine. And I love it. So yes, I did grow up eating frozen ego waffles. We didn't have a waffle iron. And those frozen discs of white flour and sugar and preservatives were probably one of the main contributors to my chubby short frame. But we did make our own pancakes because everybody back then made their own pancakes. The idea of a frozen pre-made pancake hadn't been dreamed up yet by Foodiness Inc. And actually, in our house, the frozen Eggo waffles and the pancakes were eaten with real maple syrup as we went to Vermont occasionally to visit my hippie Aunt Bella and Uncle Charlie. Now, we would bring home a gallon of the precious real maple syrup, and I'd beg instead for the fake stuff. It was thicker and sweeter and more normal. My friends' families ate pancake syrup. They were normal. I had enough working against me at the time socially, and Log Cabin or Aunt Jemima would have just eased the social pain just a bit. Artificially flavored colored corn syrup with fake maple and fake butter flavoring is what pancake syrups are, by the way, although I'm sure you all know that. Although I was always amazed when I was teaching by how many of my students didn't know that when I was still at the culinary school, you know, before I became a consultant. Now, the frozen Eggos were strictly for weekday breakfasts. We used to make real pancakes on the weekend from flour and eggs and all that stuff and cook them on a griddle. You could have used Bisquick or pancake mix from a box back then, but as far as I know, there weren't frozen pre-made pancakes yet. Or frozen pre-made pancake batter, for that matter. It's like someone took a survey in the early 90s and asked people what the hardest thing to make was, and they said, pancakes? So voila, frozen batter and then frozen pancakes. Now, not having a waffle iron, okay, I get it. You don't have to make your own waffles. But not being able to cook a pancake, I don't get it. It's like the pan in pancake has become meaningless. You don't need a pan to make a pancake, just a microwave. Pancakes have lost their sense of origin. Just another foodiness commodity in a shrinking world. Now, I don't actually even really get the idea of eating pancakes or waffles in our era because they're basically just cake. I mean, what's cake? Flour, butter, egg, sugar, baking powder, milk? Pancakes? Same stuff. Waffles? Same stuff. Now, if you were a farmer or a field hand or a lumberjack or a cowboy or a blacksmith or a maple sugar guy or even Amish, I would get the need for the 1,000-calorie pile of flour and sugar for breakfast. You had work to do. But consultants and social media analysts and insurance salesmen and radio hosts, not so much. Bill Cosby has a very old routine, probably from the early 60s, about letting his kids eat chocolate cake for breakfast and then fighting with his wife about it. Because she thought that it was inappropriate. But his point was that they were basically eating cake every day anyway in the form of pancakes or cereal. He was right. Google it. It's hilarious. So flash forward 35 years or so, and I'm all grown up. Same height, but not quite as chubby anymore. Eerily similar glasses, though, too. And that t-shirt now would be such a hot item in so many Brooklyn neighborhoods. But now I live in the city, in a formerly rundown neighborhood turned upscale hip seemingly overnight. And while on my street, we have two custom perfumers and two custom bridal shops and an awesome ramen place and a craft beer store within two blocks, we also, oddly enough, have an IHOP. IHOP opened a few blocks away in what's left of the lower income shopping district that is rapidly upscaling. And I pass IHOP on my way to the Q train almost every day. And IHOP, which does stand for International House of Pancakes, by the way, which is what it used to be called, serves up a whole lot of breakfast cake across America. And face it, that is what they're serving, breakfast cake. But when the breakfast cake was just plain cake with flavored corn syrup, it was bad enough. Now, of course, the breakfast cake is flavored and not just dyed red strawberry dots. Oh, no. The breakfast cakes are now cake-flavored, so it's cake-flavored cakes. IHOP has red velvet pancakes and jelly donut pancakes and cheesecake pancakes. So as the rabbis might ask, is it a pancake or a cake? Is there a difference? No, there's no difference anymore in overfed, infantilized foodiness America. You can eat a pile of red velvet cake for breakfast now because it's called a pancake, so it's socially acceptable. Or jelly donut pancakes? What are you? A donut or a pancake? Am I the only one here who thinks there's something wrong with this? And what the fuck is red velvet anyway? Oh, and just so you don't think I'm still not in a rage about flavorings after the last two shows I did, I just discovered waffle-flavored vodka, Pop-Tart-flavored vodka, smoked salmon-flavored vodka, maple bacon-flavored vodka, and blueberry pancake-flavored vodka. So now you can have your whole breakfast in liquid form. Now, my Aunt Bella, who I mentioned previously, of Vermont hippie fame, then went off to spend a few years living in Western Europe and then ultimately made her way back to the States. And she now lives in Silver Spring, Maryland. And Aunt Bella works in a school in a very low-income neighborhood, and so the kids in her school qualify for free breakfast and lunch provided by the government. Now, one of the breakfast items that the government provides for these very low-income kids is little bags of pre-made, tiny, handheld pancakes with syrup flavor baked right in. So the schools don't have to do anything but heat up the plastic bags with all the BPA and toxins leaching into the tiny cakes and hand them out. And the kids don't need to do anything but rip them open and eat them whole. No forks, no plates, no actual nutrition or food, just little round pieces of white flour and sugar and chemicals, all totally subsidized by Uncle Sam and directly contributing to the rapid rise in diabetes and obesity that first-generation Americans are now developing. Not to mention teaching impressionable kids early on that eating little handheld cakes from a bag is perfectly fine and even good for them. And guess who makes the little cakes? Effing Eggo. That's the last time I rock that t-shirt. We are through Eggo. So tonight, here in the Fallout Shelter, we have a special guest. Yes, really, we actually have a guest in the Fallout Shelter, but tonight, my guest is my pal, Eric Rotchow from Garden Fork TV. Now, Eric and I just did a video on making gravy for Thanksgiving for his YouTube channel, and you should watch it because it's great. And Eric is here because he makes his own maple syrup, so I decided that to contrast my typical rage against the foodiness machine, we would actually have someone on and talk about something real, which is maple syrup. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Eric will be joining us here in the Fallout Shelter to talk about maple syrup.
This one's called Get Slow by Jemba Jemba, and you're listening to Let's Get Real on heritageradionetwork.org. The following program has been brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. From the moment Route 11 Potato Chips dropped their first batch of chips back in the early days of 1992, they understood their destiny as a high-quality producer. Instead of succumbing to the frenzy of mass production, they took advantage of their small size and made chipping a personal art form. The payoff was immediate. An incredible potato chip. With a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. In this world of uncertainty that we live in, Route 11 Potato Chips believes comfort food should be just that. Know where your food comes from. For more information, visit RT11.com.
Welcome back to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. And remember that if you're a fan of Let's Get Real, you can follow me on Twitter at Let's Get Real Show. I'm really trying to get more Twitter followers here, people, so come on. Let's do it. Get on it. You can also find the show on Facebook. You can also listen to any Heritage Radio show ever on our website, heritageradionetwork.org, where you should also become a member because we are member supported. You can also find my show at letsgetrealshow.com, and all the shows ever are on iTunes, and they're free, and free is the best price. So you can listen to them at your convenience and at your leisure. Okay, so as I said, we have a guest here in the Foodiness Fallout Shelter tonight, which is Eric Rotchow. Eric, welcome to the Fallout Shelter.
Hey, Thank you.
Thanks for joining us here, way underground, where it's safe from foodiness. So I know Eric from a long time ago because I was actually a guest on his podcast. Originally, it was a podcast. And what did we talk about? I think we talked about radishes and foods that I don't like.
And we also talked about some basic cooking skills as
well. Oh, right. That's right.
We have two things. We have Garden Fork Radio,
right,
which is our iTunes podcast. And then we have Garden Fork TV, which is our YouTube channel. You can also watch the videos on iTunes as well.
Oh, okay. So you're actually very prolific with that stuff.
Yeah, we do. Once a week, we have a TV show and a radio show.
Yeah. Yeah. You're doing what I only talk about doing. I can't seem to get it together.
I'll help you.
Okay. I'll take you up on that. So Eric is like an all-around super handy, crafty guy and sporty and outdoorsy, and you do all kinds of stuff. You hunt and you build things and you beekeep like me. And
yep.
What else? What am I leaving out?
Gardening and DIY and truck repair.
Wow. That's it?
I don't like paying people to do it.
Nuclear engineering, stuff like that. Yeah. Okay. So you also have been making your own maple syrup.
Oh, yeah.
Lately. So for how many years now?
This will be my third year making it. I've helped other people make it previous years, which is where I learned. And then I have sugar maples in my yard. Mm-hmm. I live in Brooklyn, but I have a house in Northwest Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And there are sugar maples in the yard. And I decided one day I was going to tap my sugar maples.
Why not? They're there.
Yeah.
It's free food.
So I learned from helping my friends who have what's called a sugar shack.
Oh, yeah.
And then I started making it myself. And it's pretty cool to make the stuff that comes out of your yard.
So we were talking a little bit before the show because, you know, I'm a little bit obsessed with Little House on the Prairie, as
yeah,
you
we
heard.
Know that.
You
yes.
know that. Laura Ingalls and I had this ongoing conversation when I was a little kid where I introduced her to all the wonders of the modern world. But one of the chapters in Little House in the Big Woods was about growing up in her early years in Wisconsin, and there's this whole chapter about sugaring, and then, you know, once all the sugar had been boiled to make the syrup, they had this big party, and it was all really exciting, and they ate tons of syrup and everything. So that doesn't really have anything to do with anything other than the fact that I am still obsessed with that. And so when I found out from you that you were making your own syrup, I thought that would be a great way to link you into this show. So how do you do it? What happens?
Well, you have to prepare much like hunting. Like if you want to go hunt for deer, you have to figure out where the deer are first, and you start that in the summer.
Uh-huh.
And you do the same thing with sugaring. You have to identify the sugar maples because most maples in people's suburban yards are Norway maples.
Oh, the ones that turn bright red aren't necessarily sugar maple.
Right.
Oh.
And so you get your tree identification books. Audubon has a great one.
Mm-hmm.
There's another one called Bark, which is a bark identification book.
Mm.
And that really helps in the fall when the leaves have fallen off and you've waited too long to identify. they need to be sugar maples. You can tap other maples. You can tap birches, but the sugar content is much, much lower.
Right. In Russia, they tap the birches and they make like a beverage out of that sap.
Right. I have some black birches, and Leda Meredith, who is a local forager, asked me to tap my black birches, and she wants some birch syrup, so I got to try that.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think it's big in Scandinavia, too, birch syrup. Yeah.
And then you basically get ready in the winter. You order your supplies. You have to determine whether you want to do the bucket method or the tubing method.
Oh, yeah.
And I couldn't buy any buckets. None of my neighbors would sell me buckets. So I ordered tubing online. If you just search for maple syrup supplies, you'll find some of the big companies. And order them now. Don't wait till January because in January they sell out.
It's like beekeeping, too. Stuff sells out.
Yeah, I've
noticed. Yeah.
And then in the late winter, early spring, you will tap your trees. And the ideal is a cold nights below freezing and warm days above 40. And that causes a hydraulic reaction in the trees where the sap is coming from the roots and traveling up the tree. And you've tapped the tree safely, not too many taps. There's a mathematical equation for how many taps you can put in based on the diameter of the tree. And then you collect this kind of sweet watery stuff and you boil it down and then you make syrup. And it becomes syrup when it reaches 7.5 degrees above the local boiling point. And it's cool.
Based on your altitude?
Right, based on your altitude. So you boil water, see what your local boiling point
is,
add 7.5 degrees to that.
Huh.
So I have my digital
Fahrenheit
thermometer. Yeah. So I learned from hanging out at my friend Sugar Shack's, where my bee yard is at the Maple Knoll Farm in Connecticut, and they have a Sugar Shack. And so in the winters, they're just the nicest people in the world, and I would hang out with them. And they have a big reservoir. It's basically a big cow water tank, and it's gravity-fed into a giant evaporator. And I helped them a number of years, and they taught me how it all worked. And then I decided I just was going to do it myself. And the first 2 years, I used a turkey deep fryer.
To boil it down.
Yeah, propane.
Yeah.
And I realized that was not the most carbon-friendly. It was just big carbon footprint there.
Well, traditionally, people just use wood fires.
Right. And I have a ton of wood in my yard. Mm. So this year, I'm building an evaporator out of a metal filing cabinet.
Of course you are.
And we'll have some videos about that. By the way, we have a ton, just a little personal plug, we have a ton
of
how to make maple syrup videos on YouTube and on the gardenfork.tv site.
Oh, okay.
A lot of people learn from it, and I love it. So, and I learned about this file cabinet hack from Earth Eats, which is a public radio show, and I believe it's in Indiana. And they have a Flickr set. If you type in Earth Eats in Flickr, Earth Eats maple syrup in Flickr or in a search engine, there's a photo set from a local historic farm where they built a filing cabinet evaporator. And one of my neighbors was throwing out a metal filing cabinet, and I got some, and I needed angle iron, so I got some, you know, those mattress frames, those brown mattress frames people throw out?
Mm-hmm.
That's angle iron.
Hmm.
Angle iron's expensive in the store. So we're going to hack this together with steam table trays that'll sit in the top of the thing. And I have a ton of pine in my yard. You can burn white pine, not in your fireplace, but in your
right, because the creosote.
Yeah, so.
I remember that.
And I'll start building it in January.
Wow, I want to see it.
Yeah, I'll be posting pictures of it.
Yeah.
And it's really helpful if you can get some of your friends involved, because I do it myself, and none of my friends really help me, and if you're doing buckets, you're holding you're holding 2 gallons of watery liquid walking through 2 feet of snow.
Right.
So I use tubing, and then I bought some of those big blue barrels that the Caribbean people ship their foodstuffs back to the island countries.
Yeah.
Have you seen those?
Yeah, we got some to do a rainwater collection thing up at my little bungalow. Yeah.
And those are perfect. You could also use... People around me use trash cans as a collection. So I have tubing connected to like 10 trees on a slope.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the bottom, I collect it.
Huh.
And then I haul it over to my burner and I boil it all down.
So what's the ratio? I think I once read it was like 50 gallons of sap to a gallon of syrup or something.
Well, it depends on the year and it depends on the weather.
Okay.
You become very attuned to the weather. Much like gardening or hunting, again, you're very attuned to the weather. And what the year has been, how much rain has been there. But it's generally 40 to 1.
Okay.
Now, the bonus of using buckets rather than, they're called sap lines.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have home brewing equipment, you have those 5 or 6 gallon brewing buckets.
Right.
They're perfect for collecting sap from trees.
Which, of course, you have.
Yeah. Well, we make our own beer.
Because you make your own beer.
Hard cider. Yeah,
right,
we had. Ooh, that was good.
I tasted. That was so good. I know.
But the beauty of that is that the sap collects during the day, and then you let it sit in the buckets overnight, and the water freezes.
Oh.
And the sugary water doesn't.
Doesn't.
And there's an argument to be made that you should boil that ice down anyway, because it has some sugar in it. But the BTUs you'll expel, the time and heat you're going to have to use to do that, you're better off pulling the ice out of the buckets.
Hmm.
So you have a little skimmer. You can sometimes pull it out by hand.
Uh-huh.
Of course, we have a video about this.
Of course.
But you'll see I have these big white 5 gallon homebrew buckets, which you can get at your local homebrew store, like Brooklyn Homebrew. And you just yank the ice out, and then you're left with this concentrated sap.
Mm.
So that requires less boiling, so the ratio goes down.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. So nature sort of does it part of the way for you.
Yeah.
So how much have you yielded in past years?
Usually about 3 or 4 gallons.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just collect it, and I have a big oyster, kind of a big clam or lobster pot on top of a propane burner.
Uh-huh.
And then the next year, I borrowed my neighbor's propane burner, so I was like dual burnering.
Mm.
But still, it's me doing it.
Yeah. No, it's so cool. Yeah.
But if you have neighbors, like in the town nearby me, there was a farm, and the farmer was older, and he had retired, and he had a sugar shack that was dormant.
Mm.
And one of his neighbors said, hey, could we fix up your sugar shack and use it? And he said, sure. So they got 3 other families involved, and they have teenage kids. And they bucket collect and then they boil every weekend.
So it's like a sugar commune.
Right. So if you, you know, if you know of a farm upstate where the sugar shack is going dormant, they'll more than likely, if you say, you know, you don't want to trample over their property, but you never know, they probably want it used.
Yeah, right, because they probably hate the idea that it's not being used, and they wistfully look at it.
And evaporators, real stainless steel evaporators, are really expensive.
Yeah, it's like with beekeeping. I mean, to get like an extractor is really expensive.
Yeah.
You know, centrifugal extractor.
You can also do really, really simple stuff. Like, I have another neighbor who has literally an iron tray that's about the size of this table. So it's about 3 foot by 4 foot. He puts it up on cinder blocks, and he burns what's called slash from logging underneath it, because the local sawmill, he'll buy it from there. And he just has, it's like a giant sheet pan that he boils.
Right, so he has tons of surface area.
And you want surface area. Yeah. And he just, when it's ready, he ladles it out. He doesn't have any fancy valves like the evaporators do. Mm-hmm. And you're out in the woods boiling stuff. It's great.
Right, and it's like late winter, and so some days are probably really beautiful, and it's nice. It's like being outside and in nature. And
it has to be warm or else the sap won't run.
Right,
sure. The problem with that is if it's too warm, the sap stops running.
Oh, see? It's very tricky. That temperature range will get you with everything.
Yeah, I have my buddy who I learned from, where my bees are, he pays attention to the height of the goldenrod in summer.
Oh.
And if the height of the goldenrod is above this one fence post, he knows it's going to be a harder winter, and that'll affect the sap.
Wow.
That's really fascinating.
Yeah. So we don't have that much time, but let's go back and sort of talk about the origins of all this and like who figured it out. The Native Americans, of course, were the first ones to do it. They taught the colonists. What do you know about all that? I know you said you did some research.
I think a number of Native Americans kind of discovered it on their own. I mean, I've done this. If you prune a sugar maple in late winter, it gushes sap.
Mm.
And you can see squirrels nibble at the corners of the tree where it meets the trunk. I think they're eating the syrup.
Oh, sap.
And it's really sweet. And they probably thought, this is kind of sweet tasting. And then someone said, what happens if we boil the water out?
Voila.
And then it just became a thing. And it's labor intensive. It is, it's even now it's labor intensive. You can have very fancy reverse osmosis machines and things like that. But by and large, it's family run.
Mm-hmm.
And it's farmers who need an income in the winter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and that's why it's so expensive, really, because it is so labor intensive and the yield is not much. So you really need to sort of produce a lot to make it worth your while. And I had heard this story about up in Canada, there's this maple syrup collective, and it was robbed. Did you hear that story?
Yeah, they were keeping it in barrels, and somebody slowly tapped the barrels. I didn't realize there was a maple syrup reserve in Canada, but I guess
it's like their federal reserve. Like, instead of gold, they keep maple syrup.
Well, I mean, for what it sells for.
Yeah, I know. I had to buy some for something a few days ago, and it was like $20 for, I think it was a quart, maybe a quart. It was expensive.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it takes work. It's a lot easier than just taking some corn syrup and making fake stuff.
Right, which is, of course, what we all grew up eating. Well, not me.
I did.
You did? Yeah. Even though you grew up in Wisconsin.
Yeah. I mean, I remember Eggo waffles and all this. So we're of a similar age, so I can like...
Right. You can relate. Did you have the little t-shirt?
No. I always was kind of behind the curve on branding.
Oh, it's really probably the only thing I ever wore that was branded. I'm surprised my parents even let me get it because they were opposed to all of that, too. I don't know. Somehow that one, like, slipped through. But I wore it, you know, probably until it fell apart. Yeah, I mean, it's really appalling, you know, what people sort of accept as food. Something like pancake syrup is a perfect example. I mean, it's just artificially flavored, colored corn syrup. And they're just willing to pour it all over everything.
Yeah, and homemade pancakes are wicked easy to make.
Wicked easy. Right, and good. I mean, I don't eat that kind of stuff anymore because it makes me want to go back to bed. But if I were going to, I would just make my own. It's so easy. That's what I don't understand, how pancakes have become completely disassociated from the pan. They're not something people cook anymore.
Oh, real quick about boiling sap.
Oh,
if
you're
thinking about doing this, don't do it inside.
Oh.
Because the humidity is so much that you will take the paint off your kitchen ceiling.
Good,
but you can
know.
Do this. I want people to go out, and my whole thing is you can do this, and done is better than perfect.
Well, that's kind of the whole ethos of Garden Fork, is that you do all this cool stuff, and then you show people that they can do it too, and that's what I love about it.
And I make mistakes all the time.
But that's how you learn.
Yeah.
Right? When I was little, I was learning how to ice skate, and my ice skating teacher would say, you know, the more you fall, the more you learn. And I was like, no, that's stupid. I don't get it. But now I get it. As an adult, I have learned that. Yeah.
And we learn a lot about you listening to your show, by the way.
Oh, really? Probably too much.
The yellow school bus thing was kind of traumatic.
The school bus.
Going to the wrong school. I was like, ee!
Right? Isn't that horrible? Could you imagine that would never happen today because kids are so like hyper.
Microchipped
and, you know, micromanaged. My mom just, okay, you're six, walk out to the bus stop. And then just this driver comes along from some other school district and picks me up.
Yeah, it'd be all over the local news. Yeah,
right. I know, and there'd probably be a lawsuit. But no, just, oh, they called her up. Mrs. Wise, we have your kid. Come and get her. What the hell was that? I still feel traumatized by that.
Yeah, well, it's probably good that you talked it out a little bit.
I think so. Yeah, I feel better now.
I could be your therapist.
Maybe I should go eat some pancakes. Make myself feel better. All right, well, unfortunately, we're out of time. Anything else about maple syrup you want to add? Anything? Shameless plug.
Don't eat the fake stuff.
Don't eat the fake stuff. Screw you, Mrs. Butterworth.
Support local farms.
Support local farms and local products. I mean, the beautiful thing about something like maple syrup is that it really is a truly local product to wherever you are if they're producing it. And it's also one of the only truly Native American foods that we eat.
Totally.
You know, wild rice, maple syrup, there's not that much more that's indigenous to North America. Most of what we eat came from the New World or came from other places.
Acorns.
Acorns. Do you eat acorns?
No.
You can.
They don't taste good.
It's a very big... You have to boil them like multiple times to get out the tannins.
Yeah.
But people ate them. That was the flour before there was wheat. You know, wheat doesn't come from here.
I have an acorn intolerance.
You do. That's going to be the new thing. I'm sorry. I can't eat acorns. Do you have anything that's acorn-free?
Acorn-free. We're having acorn-free pizza tonight.
We are. It's really good. Yeah, we're going to finish it now. So unfortunately, we are... totally running out of time. But thanks so much for making the trip down to the Foodiness Fallout Shelter and visiting us here. And remember that if you don't want to eat cake-flavored cakes or any other type of shit for breakfast, keep listening to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. America Wide's your host. Thanks to Jack for sitting in tonight in the booth. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.